Agreeableness, conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, and openness to experience. These are the five personality traits of the five-factor model. But what do they look like in context? How do we integrate these personality traits into everyday life? We're going to be talking about that today on Real Talk. Let's do it. Welcome back to another episode of Real Talk with Kane Adams. We are right at the end of our personality series that we've been going over the past 8 weeks or the past 8 episodes. We've looked at agreeableness, at conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, and openness to experience. And what I thought would be great for the final episode is to discuss how these personalities work in context. How do we integrate these personalities into our everyday lives? Because it's one thing to learn about the personality traits, and it's another thing to understand how they actually affect our lives on the daily. So we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be covering three different facets of life that we all deal with. Most of us deal with, probably not all, but we're going to discuss how each of these traits are integrated and how personality makes an impact in regards to these facets of life. So we're going to look at three of them. They are intimate relationships, which is also involving marriage and dating. We're going to look at parenting, and we're going to look at career. So intimate relationships, parenting, and career. Okay, so let's start with intimate relationships. What does personality look like when it comes to intimate relationships? In particular, let's begin with dating. So you're single, okay? You're in pursuit of a mate. You're looking for someone whether to marry or to be in a long-term relationship with. When you're in pursuit of someone, a good question to ask, which I'm sure a lot of us might have asked before, is when it comes to personality, is it better to be opposite or is it better to be similar? Is it better to have opposites attract or is it better to be, you know, a birds of a feather flock together? And I would say that for the most part, the latter option will definitely be the better approach to take when pursuing a mate. It's better to be more similar in terms of personality temperament with your partner than it is to be opposite, with the exception of neuroticism. And the reason for this is because the more similar you are in terms of personality, the more you understand how the other person ticks. So, because remember how we talked about personality as a frame of reference. So you view the world through the lens of your personality trait. If you're high in extroversion, then you're going to be viewing the world through the lens of social opportunity. Or if you're high in openness to experience, you're going to be viewing the world through the lens of creativity or complex thinking or complex problem solving. And so wouldn't it be best to be viewing the world through the same lens as your partner, right? Because then you can understand each other. And the more you understand each other, the more you're able to navigate through conflict in the relationship. And so you want it to be similar. If you are wildly different in terms of personality, then you're going to be looking at the world through very different lenses, which is going to be difficult to navigate. Of course, and the way that would look like would be, say, if you're a highly extroverted person and you find that you recharge through social interaction and your partner is a very introverted person, so that the way that they recharge is through independence or through solitude, then who's going to win? Who's going to compromise, right? When one person wants to be hanging out with friends all the time, every night, while the other person wants to just be lying on the couch watching TV, having a quiet night in, there's got to be some compromise there, right? And so it's going to be very difficult. Whereas, of course, if you both share that same trait, then that's not going to be too much of a problem. If you're an agreeable person, you have a disagreeable partner, you're going to run into problems because, you know, the agreeable person's going to say, well, I'm easy. Whatever you want, dear, I'll go with. It's like the dinner debate, you know, what do you want for dinner? Whatever you want, I'm easy, I'm happy. Whereas the disagreeable person's going to say, well, I want to know what you want for a change, you know? Why can't you make up your damn mind? And there's going to be some tension in that. And so the agreeable person is going to find the disagreeable person harsh and demanding and unpleasant and very blunt, whereas the disagreeable person is going to find the agreeable person very wishy-washy and indecisive, and it's going to frustrate the hell out of them. So it could be frustrating if you're both opposites in terms of personality traits. But in saying this, on, I guess you could say, you also don't want someone who's completely the same as you either. And the Bible talks about how iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. And so sometimes you actually need someone who is different. Well, two reasons. First of all, it's going to be very rare that you find someone who's exactly the same as you. That would be like a chance, one in a billion chance that they're going to be exactly the same as you in terms of traits. But the other reason is because if you have someone who's slightly different than you, then you're able to sharpen each other in that. So, for example, you have someone who's agreeable. You might be in an intimate relationship with someone who's less agreeable than you are. Well, they can teach you how to stand up for yourself and how to articulate and explain what you want. Whereas the agreeable person is going to be able to teach the disagreeable person how to show a bit more compassion, how to show a bit more respect, or to serve the needs of others instead of always serving the needs of themselves. And so, you want someone who is similar enough to you, but also, well, I should say, you want someone who's different enough than you that you can sharpen each other, but not so wildly different that you never understand each other. So the key would be balance, but you want to err towards the side of similarity when it comes to personality traits. Now, like I mentioned before, the only exception with this would be neuroticism. So if both partners are low in neuroticism, then it's fine. In fact, that's probably an ideal case. I suppose if you're both low in neuroticism, let's say you're in a relationship and both of you rank very low in neuroticism, the only thing you probably need to be aware of would be that there would be a tendency to, from both of you, to not detect threat. And so particularly if you're both extroverted, then you may be running the risk of always taking risks all the time and not weighing up the cost or not weighing up the dangers that could lurk behind the shadows that could take you out. So you probably want to be a bit more intentional about that. But apart from that, the opposite, if you have two partners together who are in an intimate relationship and they are both high in neuroticism, then it's going to be an absolute relational nightmare. It's going to be hell on earth because there's no emotional stability. And you need that. You know, the Bible talks about how, you know, wise is the man who builds his house on the rock, and foolish is the man who builds his house on the sand. And when the waves come, the house on the rock lasts, whereas the house that's built on the sand doesn't. And that can relate to relationships as well, because emotional stability is the bedrock. It's the foundation of a healthy relationship. You need emotional stability. And so someone has to be emotionally stable. Otherwise, the relationship's going to rock and it's going to fall over. If you have both partners that are extremely sensitive to negative emotion, then it's going to be very difficult to be able to build a healthy relationship. Because there's no emotional stability there. There's no rock on which the other person can latch onto, I guess you could say. It's like you're both crawling up the walls trying to find something stable, you know? And so it's going to be very difficult. Neuroticism is the biggest predictor for divorce as well from a personality perspective. And there's been many studies to back that up. And that's because neuroticism is the best predictor for general unhappiness anyway. And that's why, and Jordan Peterson talks about this too, the statistic is 75% of divorces are initiated by women. And a reason for that is because women, on average, are more neurotic than men are. They're more sensitive to negative emotion. And I think the reason for that is because they need to be sensitive to negative emotion because they need to be sensitive to threat. Detecting threat is a necessary skill when it comes to infant care. So you need to take it very seriously. If you are extremely prone to negative emotion, and you know that, and you're dating someone who is also very prone to negative emotion, then you need to count the cost before moving into something like marriage, because it could be very difficult for you in terms of a relationship to be able to move forward and to navigate that. You're going to be in for a rough ride if there's no emotional stability in the relationship. Okay, so what about if you're already married? So if you're already married, what you want to do is you want to assess your personalities, take the test at understandmyself.com, assess your personalities, and work out where you differ the most in terms of temperament, and then make a plan on how you can narrow the gap in terms of the difference in of personality traits. So if someone is at 30% introverted and an extroversion, and they're at 60, and the other person's at 60% extroversion, you want to make a plan to find ways that you can narrow that gap. Something to be aware of as well in regards to personality, well, in relation to narrowing the gap, is that personality is biologically rooted, which means that for the most part, your personality is determined from when you were born. There are little things that you can do to change that. For example, environment can play a little role, and culture can play a little role in terms of swaying where you are on the scale of personality. But for the most part, it's pretty rigid. We talked about it in the first episode, right? How personality is rigid in terms of plasticity. And so a good way to look at it, and Jordan Peterson looks at it this way, is to look at personality in relation to a bell curve distribution. I've got a couple of graphs here that can help you to understand this. So here we have personality distribution. If you look on the x-axis on the bottom, the horizontal, we've got 0% on the left side and then 99% on the right side and then 50% in the middle. That's measured in percentile. And then on the y-axis, on the vertical axis on the left, we have population, in which we have majority at the top and then minority at the bottom. And you notice the curve of it's like a bell curve of this distribution. So say from around like 25%, between 25% and then say 75%, the bell curve increases dramatically towards the majority. So what that means is that on any given trait, between 25% and 75% is the majority of the population is going to lie there. And then the further you go from 20, the further up you go from 75%, the less likely people are going to be ranking on that place. And then the same goes with below 10%. So, say if you rank in a trait above 90%, you are of a very small minority. If you're at 99%, you're at an even smaller minority. So it goes exponentially, in that regard. And then likewise, if you're below 10%, you're of a small minority. If you're at 0%, you're a very, very small minority of people that are at that range in terms of trait. Okay, so let's take extroversion for an example. Let's say you rank 29% in extroversion. So what that means is that from birth, you're a fairly introverted person, biologically speaking. And what you have is the power, like I mentioned before, to expand that range. Whether that's through, and sometimes that can happen involuntary through environment or through culture, or that can happen voluntarily, so through learning skills and being more intentional about understanding your personality and how you can expand it. So you can expand it, say, from 29%, you could expand it up to around 37%, these are random numbers, or you can expand it down to 21%. So you're expanding that range of extroversion of where you could rank on the trait. So what's going to happen is that if you attempt to expand that range too much, you're going to come up against some resistance because you start to go against your biological temperament. This is the law of diminishing marginal returns. So what happens is, I guess in that sense, the first few degrees of movement away from the initial point will be easy because it's little cost with high return. But the further away from the initial point you go, the harder it's going to be until you get to a place of resistance where it's high cost and little to no return. And so you're just not going to be able to do it. And so this is why you might have someone like this person here who's naturally introverted at 29%. They can expand their range to, say, 37%, 40%, but they're never going to get at 80%. They're never going to become a 90% highly extroverted person because it just goes so wildly against their biological makeup and their genetic code that they just can't do it, And so you can expand your range, but you can only expand it by so much. So then coming back to marriage, as a couple, it's your responsibility to find where you are in terms of the distribution and where you lie, and the test obviously tells you this, and to find ways to narrow that gap. So obviously if you're wildly different, so if someone's, 10% introverted and the other one's 90% extroverted, you're not going to be able to meet in the middle. But if, say, someone is 40% extroverted and the other person is 60%, then you can expand that range to hopefully meet in the middle. And the more that you can narrow that gap, the more you'll be able to navigate the tension of a relationship because you can start to understand each other. With the personality test as well at understandmyself.com, there's an option to combine results with your partner too, which is really good. So you can do the test, your partner does the test, and then you can push a button that combines the results together and gives you a really comprehensive report on how each trait complements each other and where you might find some clashes as well. So I highly recommend doing that. So how do you narrow that gap? In other words, how do you expand that range? Well, you do it just in the same way that you do it if you were single. You be intentional. So, for example, if you are an agreeable person, you find ways to learn how to be a little more disagreeable or how to be assertive. If you are introverted, you start employing some skills on and practice a bit more social interaction. Or if you are highly extroverted, you'd be more intentional about understanding the value of quiet time. or if you're a conscientious person, right, you'd be more intentional on chilling out a little bit more, relaxing a little bit more. And if you're an unconscientious person, you get out your Google calendars, you start making a schedule. And the more you do that, the more you're going to be able to expand that range. And then something to note as well is that when you expand that range, that doesn't mean that your biological temperament changes necessarily. For example, well, let's put it this way. If you're an agreeable person and you practice assertiveness training, that doesn't mean that you automatically become a less agreeable person. What it means is that you can become a less agreeable person if you choose to be. So you have this realm that you can play with of where on that scale you can be and where you can choose to be, if that makes sense. Okay, let's talk about parenting. So that's marriage. Let's talk about parenting. Now, because personality is largely biologically determined, this means that your child will begin to show signs of personality in relation to the five-factor model right from birth. A good example of this one would actually be me. So I'm a twin, and which means obviously my sister and I, we were born on the same day. And my mum talks about how when my sister was born, she's 8 minutes older than me, she came out of the womb completely placid, with a calm demeanor, looking around the room, you know, wondering what was going on, kind of very chill, very placid, happy to be there, basically. Whereas for me, I was the opposite. When I came out of the womb, I was crying, I was screaming, I was kicking, I didn't want to be here. My comfort had just been totally disturbed. My peace had been shattered, and I was kicking and screaming. And what's quite funny is that both my sister and I did the personality test, and she ranked very low in neuroticism. She's something like 2 or 3 or something on neuroticism, whereas I actually ranked quite high. I was 80%. And so one could say that you could see that right from birth, right? When I was kicking and screaming, you could see perhaps I'm more sensitive to negative emotion, whereas she was very calm. There's just something to think about, right? But all that to say really is that, so personality is biologically rooted, which we have drilled home very much so. So something that you want to do as a parent is that you want to pay close attention to the behaviors of your child. Because often at an early age, the way that they respond and the way that they behave will definitely give you clues to what their personality is like. So you ask questions like, how do they react when things go well? How do they react when things don't go well? What activities do they prefer to engage in? Or what are they like in terms of on the social front? How are they with social interaction? And these questions will help you to answer, well, it'll help you to, the answers to these questions will help you to show you what kind of personality your child may have. And then once you can kind of start to gauge where they are in terms of a personality perspective, whether they're introverted or extroverted or agreeable or neurotic, then you can begin to tailor your parenting style to cater for your child's personality. And that doesn't mean that you allow your child to rule over you, because there's obviously a lot of parenting methods that are going around these days where it's like the child is in control. And believe me, if you employ that, you're in for a hell of a time, and it's not going to be good for you or for the child. And so what I mean is that when you when you understand the personality of your child, you can tailor the way that you parent to their personality, which is going to be beneficial to both of you. And I'm sure you may or may not realize that a one-size-fits-all approach to parenting is not a good strategy to employ. It very rarely works, if it works at all, because you may have, say, 3 or 4 children, and if you employ just a one-size-fits-all parenting style, there'll be some children that'll benefit from it greatly, and there'll be some children that don't. And so that's something definitely to be aware of. As a parent, you're going to experience a natural tilt to parent your child in two ways. One, in the way that you were parented as a child from your own parents, and then two, in accordance to your own personality. And so, let's say growing up, your parents might have been quite harsh on you. Maybe they critiqued you quite harshly, or they were correcting you constantly, and maybe their parenting style could be deemed as something quite harsh. And maybe that benefited you well. Maybe you were a disagreeable child, so you needed a sense of harsh parenting or harsh discipline to bring order and to bring limitations in your life in which you can thrive in. Maybe you needed that. And so then if you're naturally going to employ that same parenting style to your children, you might have a disagreeable child, whether that works well. But you may have a highly neurotic child who's agreeable. And if you employ that parenting style onto them, they're just going to be crushed. If you treat them harshly, or if you critique them all the time, they're going to find that very difficult. And so that's something just that you need to think about. Maybe someone like a child like that would probably benefit more from a hug than they would from a scolding in terms of parenting. So these are the kind of things that you need to think about as a parent, that one size does not fit all, and that you need to think about how you can tailor your parenting to suit the personality of your child. And then the great thing as well when it comes to understanding your child's personality is that you can then foster to their strengths. For example, if you have a child who's high in openness to experience, well, you can introduce them to music or to art or to reading or things that are more creative or more intellectually minded. If your child is conscientious, then you can start to employ a routine into their life that they can thrive in, right? Or if your child, maybe they're very introverted, so you can be more intentional in spending one-on-one time with them, which they would really appreciate. And so you can foster to their strengths, which is fantastic. And then on the flip side, of course, is that you can also address your child's weakness when you understand their personality. For example, if your child is highly introverted, they're not going to want to engage in social interaction. But of course, as humans, we're social beings. So we need to engage in social interaction. We need to be involved in community. And so you can recognize that in your child and then help them to develop the skills of social interaction at a more comfortable and appropriate pace that will help them. And so what you're going to do is, well, you're not going to just leave them in their solitude for 24/7 because it's not going to be good for them. But at the same time, you're not going to get frustrated and dump them at every child's birthday party you possibly can because they're going to resist. It'll be too much for them. So when you recognize that your child may be low in introversion, in terms of extroversion, and so they're introverted, then you can tailor your parenting to that, and you can help them to foster their strengths, but also approach their weaknesses as well. Some of the other examples of that would be, if they're agreeable, you can teach them to stand up for themselves. If they're extroverted, you can teach them the value of quiet time. If they're low in conscientiousness, you can teach them the value of routine. If they're high in conscientiousness, you can teach them the value of leisure. If they're neurotic, you can gently guide them to face their fears. And if they're disagreeable, then you can teach them the value of selflessness and respect as well. So you foster to their strengths, but you also address their weaknesses, which will be massively beneficial to them. And it's good to know as well, because you don't necessarily need to teach an agreeable child how to be selfless. It's naturally ingrained in them, just as you don't need to teach an extroverted child how to be social, because it's naturally ingrained in them. It's determined in them from birth. They're tilted in that direction. You don't need to teach them that. But you find where they are on the distribution. You foster their strengths. You address those weaknesses, and then you got the best of both worlds. Okay, let's look at the last one, the last facet of life, which is career. Now, I've mentioned this before in the series, that something you want to do is that you want to tailor your career to your personality, not your personality to your career. So remember in the first episode, we talked about plasticity, and we mentioned how personality is rigid. It's not very malleable, and we just talked about this all episode. You know, you can expand your range, but only by so much. So because of that, you don't want to try to tailor your personality to the job that you think you want. If you are low in extroversion, so you're an introverted person, and you're highly agreeable, then sales probably isn't going to be the best for you. Because to thrive in sales, you need to be constantly social, a lot of social interaction, and you need to be able to negotiate, to do that well, you need to be disagreeable, you need to be assertive. And so you want to tailor your job to your personality, not the other way around. Jordan Peterson puts it well. He says, you want to find a place where the hand you've been dealt can be optimally played. So you don't want to try to change your personality in order to fit the job that you think that you want or you need. You're just going to end up hating your job doing that. You want to tailor your job to suit your personality. And it's not a bad thing. You know, some people can think, oh, well, that means that my jobs are limited. But limited jobs are probably a good thing. Remember how we talked about it, right? With the shampoo bottles, you know, it's much easier to make a choice if you've presented with 3 shampoo bottles than it would be with 100. And it's the same thing with your career, because your personality is rigid. It means that you're going to be constrained into the types of jobs that you're going to fit into, which is going to make it easier for you to make a choice, hopefully, and what you ought to do and what you want to do. So I thought an easy way to do this would be, I've collated together a whole list of jobs in relation to personality that we can look at. And it'll help you, hopefully, when you recognize where you are on the distribution in terms of personality, to recognize what kind of jobs would suit you. So let's take them each in turn. We're going to start with agreeableness. So careers in relation to agreeableness. So we've got high agreeableness, low agreeableness. People who are high in agreeableness, they thrive in cooperation. They like to work together. They thrive in teamwork, in community, working together to achieve a common goal. So some jobs like that could be social worker, human resource or HR manager, a teacher or social counselor, nurse, healthcare provider, customer service manager, nonprofit organization manager, community organizer. So these are the kind of jobs where people work together in cooperation to make things happen. And then low agreeableness, people who are low in agreeableness thrive in competition. So they thrive in getting, well, they thrive in, they know what they want and they damn well know how to get it. Let's put it that way. And they want to win. They focus on winning. These are jobs like a lawyer. It doesn't take much imagination to see how that works. An entrepreneur, political strategist or politician, an investigative journalist, a critique or reviewer, a real estate agent or a consultant or management analyst. So, yeah, these are people who are able to negotiate. These are people who have the ability to be blunt, to bring the facts when they need to be brought, which is a really highly sought-after skill. So, yeah, so that's great. Okay, careers in relation to conscientiousness, high conscientiousness, low conscientiousness. So people who are high in conscientiousness, they thrive on order and routine. So these are the kind of jobs where they are 9 to 5, they are 40-hour week jobs kind of thing, they are set in stone. These are jobs like accountant or auditor, project manager, quality control inspector, a pharmacist, librarian or archivist, a medical doctor or surgeon, and a logistics manager or strategist. And remember, one of the traits of conscientiousness is orderliness. So these are the kind of jobs where there's a lot of order, where things are black and white, where things are put neatly in boxes. So people who are that way inclined are going to do well in these kind of jobs. And then low conscientiousness, these are people who thrive in flexibility. So we've got jobs like a freelance artist or designer, freelance writer or blogger, an event planner, a travel blogger or photographer, a tour guide, fitness instructor or personal trainer, social media influencer or content creator. So I think the common thread with these ones is that there's a lot of flexibility with their job. They don't necessarily work 9 to 5. They can work their own hours and they can incorporate leisure a lot more into their life, because leisure is something that they value. Okay, extroversion. High extroversion, low extroversion. So people who are high in extroversion, they thrive in social interaction. These are the jobs like sales representative, public relations specialist, customer service representative, teacher or instructor, human resource professional, hospitality industry professional, entertainment industry. So these are jobs where social connection is of high value and high priority. People who work well socially. And then low extroversion, these are people who thrive in independent solitude. So they prefer to have jobs where they can be left alone to do their own work. These are jobs like a writer or an author, research scientist, graphic designer or illustrator, software developer or programmer, architect or drafter, online content creator or blogger, and an accountant. So they can kind of be left to their own devices to do their own job. Social interaction is not a prerequisite at all. Okay, neuroticism. So people who are high in neuroticism, they thrive in empathy and stability. So these are jobs like therapist or counselor, health or clinical psychologist, social worker, nurse or healthcare provider, mental health advocate, life coach, crisis intervention specialist. So obviously people who are high in neuroticism are sensitive to negative emotion, which means they understand negative emotion. So people who are experiencing negative emotion would go to people who understand negative emotion to be able to help them with the negative emotion. There you go, if that makes sense. Okay, low neuroticism. These are people who thrive in high-pressured environments. So these are jobs like emergency medical technician or EMT, paramedic, air traffic controller, airline pilot, firefighter, police officer, risk analyst, a doctor, surgeon, or surgical nurse. So these are jobs where there's a lot of high pressure, where you need to be stable emotionally, and you can keep a cool head during hard times and hard pressured environments. So that's for low neuroticism. And then lastly, openness to experience. So people who are high in openness to experience, they thrive in complexity and creativity. These are jobs like creative artist or designer, research scientist, musician, innovation consultant, marketing or advertising creative, architect or interior designer, film director or producer. So these are your creative jobs. People who are highly creative are going to absolutely thrive in these kind of jobs. And then low openness to experience. These are people who thrive on focus and routine. Their jobs like bank teller or financial analyst, legal assistant or legal research, electrician, plumber or builder. So these are the trades. Data entry specialist, administration, factory worker or assembly line operator, and dental hygienist. So these are jobs where a lot of focus is involved, but it's also where people can learn a skill and hone it and really master it. There's a saying I was thinking about the other day. People who are high in openness to experience tend to be a jack of all trades but a master of none. Whereas people low in openness to experience tend to be very skilled in one or two particular skills, but they are very skilled in it. And that's really important for people like who are electricians or plumbers or builders. They're very, very skilled in these areas. And so that's where that tends to be people who are low in openness to experience. So, yeah, hopefully that helps in terms of career. And I guess just to reiterate, the main point with career is that you do not want to tailor your personality to your career. You want to tailor your career to your personality because your personality is rigid. So that brings us to the very end of this series. I really hope that you've enjoyed it. Some final thoughts, I suppose, thinking about this would be embrace your personality. Remember that personality is only one aspect of your soul, I suppose we could say. Remember right at the beginning, we talked about PEC, personality, experience, and character. So your personality is kind of who you are from birth, but your character is who you choose to be. And so, don't mistake thinking that bad character is just a result of your personality, because it's not. It's your choice. It's your choice to be an integral person, or it's your choice to be a person of love or joy or peace or self-control, a person of humility. That's your choice. That's not related to your personality. And so thank you so much for listening. You know, I really hope that you got a lot out of the series. Lots to cover, lots to think about, but you know, you're just on the beginning of this journey with personality, and I really hope and pray that as you begin to understand who you are as a person in regards to your temperaments, that that's going to help you navigate relationships in life, navigate your career, navigate every aspect of your everyday life. So enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Real Talk with Kane Adams.